From the Triangle Radio Reading Service in Raleigh, North Carolina, this is Dick Hayden, and it's time to connect to success. On Connect to Success, we explore various ways through which one can pursue their own success by learning from others. We do this through interviews with and reading articles about people who are visually impaired and who have achieved success in their lives. The content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. Connect to Success. What does that mean? Connect is pretty straightforward. It is joining two or more things together. Success is broader, yet very personal. It can be as simple as completing a single task or as complex as accomplishing a multi-part long-term goal. It's all about hope, imagination, and resilience. It's being open to what is possible, and it's personal because it is what you decide is most important to you. During today's program, we will be speaking with Sandy Romke. We will explore with her how she has connected with her personal definition of success. Welcome, Sandy.
Well, hello. Thank you.
It's great to have you here with us today.
It's my pleasure.
To begin with, Sandy, would you be willing to share with our listeners the way in which you are visually impaired and perhaps how it came about?
Sure. My condition is called macular dystrophy, and actually the proper definition is genetic juvenile macular dystrophy. It starts when you're very, very young. I was not diagnosed until I was about 12 or 13 years old, but the doctors told us that it starts when you're about 3 years old and you lose a little bit of your center vision. And by the time you're 21 years old, it stops. So whatever damage is done is the way that it stays. So my vision has pretty much stayed the same since I was about 21 years old, which is about 20 over 200.
That's a good way to avoid saying how old you are, right?
That's a very good way of saying that.
That's fascinating. It sounds like a companion disease to macular degeneration that folks who are older experience.
That's very true. And for many, many years, I have an identical twin sister, so hence the genetic juvenile part. We're both exactly the same. And we participated in a lot of research when we lived up in New Hampshire at Boston Mass Eye and Ear. And they diagnosed us as having dry macular degeneration. So when I moved here in 2007, I went to Duke University, or Duke Eye Center, actually, and I wanted to participate in more research because I think that that's a very important part of when you have a disease. If you don't participate in research, then you're not able to help other people behind you that have the problem. So I went through all the testing, and the doctor there told me, he came in the office and he said, you don't even have macular degeneration. You have what's called genetic juvenile macular dystrophy, which is even more rare than macular degeneration.
Wow, what a surprise that was.
It was. He said he'd seen it in a book, in a medical journal, but he had never had a patient with it. So now he had seen it firsthand.
Aren't you unique?
I am, yes.
Yes. And your sister as well.
Yes, we're both exactly identical. He was very surprised. It's very hard to tell our charts apart because they're so identical.
Is there any kind of family history that deals with this, or was this just something that happened to affect you and your sister?
No, we do have family history, and we didn't actually research the family history until my sister and I were diagnosed. But it turns out that over 10 generations, there were 6 individuals who were either totally blind or partially blind. So as the generations progress, the gene gets mutated, and so, like my sister and I, it's not as bad as, say, generations before us.
So it wouldn't be the same disease as such. They were blind for other reasons?
It's a blood disorder. They do know that. So I'm not sure that they even knew what the problem was back then, just that they were blind.
Did you have any particular medical care during your childhood to deal with this? Or was it simply a progression and then here you are and now figure out how to deal with it?
Well, that's exactly what happened. There is no treatment for it. During my childhood, when my sister and I grew up, it was not very prominent at the time. So we seemed to make it through school okay. Both of us received glasses when we were in junior high school. But by the time we graduated from high school, we noticed that there was a big difference. I was able to get my driving license, but I was only able to have it for 4 years because then I couldn't pass the eye test.
Oh.
So the problem with that is, compared to today, they didn't have the types of accessibility equipment then that they do now. The only thing that we were able to use was like a magnifying glass if we needed to read something. But today there's so many accessibility tools that people with visual impairments can use. Like the world is so open to them for as far as they want to take it.
Well, is your sister's progression to the same point as yours? Do you have roughly the same degree of vision at this point?
Almost exactly the same.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, we are definitely identical twins. But, you know, when we were growing up, because there were six of us in our family, there are six children, and my sister and I are the oldest, my parents always just treated us just like everybody else. There was never like, you're special because you have a disability. You're special because you're a special child, because all kids are special in their own way. But it was never like we were treated any differently than any of the other kids. So my parents always just enforced us to say, you know what? You need to figure it out. If you want to do something, you need to figure out how to do it. And I think that was a really good foundation for the both of us, because both of us become pretty good at, you know, our job. We both have a really good job. We just figured it out as we went along.
You said you were originally from where?
Well, we were both born in Niagara Falls, but we lived in New England, New Hampshire,
most of our life.
Mm-hmm.
And this came about over time, progressively. So had you learned to ski?
Yes. I snow-skied as a child.
Uh-huh.
Both of us skied, and we're very active in sports. So we bowled, been bowling, 10-pin bowling since we were 5 years old, and been playing golf since I was about 9. A lot of the tools that you learn when you're doing sports, mm-hmm. they're just repetitive, right? So even though my progression and my eyesight increased to a point where I couldn't see as well, you still learned all those early fundamentals for sports when you were a lot younger and things weren't as difficult.
And your parents encouraged that strongly, I presume.
Oh, yes. My family, all of us girls play golf, all of us bowl, all of us skied. We're very competitive.
You said all of us girls. Are all six girls?
5 girls, 1 boy.
Oh, the poor kid.
He was. He was the second to the youngest.
Oh. Maybe you doted on him.
We did.
Okay.
Yes, he was very much doted on.
There's hope for us guys.
Yes.
Is he active in sports, or
yes.
Was he as a child, too?
Yeah, he plays hockey,
mm-hmm.
and he's a great golfer.
So the whole family?
The whole family.
I think that's fascinating that your parents, and they need to be congratulated for, if you would, mainstreaming you, saying, you know, you're a person, you can do. Get out there and try it, see what happens.
That's true. And, you know, a lot of people really need to understand that they can do anything that anybody else can, because I always tell anybody that I facilitate training to, everybody has a handicap, and some of us are just more visible than others. And so, therefore, you should be able to do anything that anybody else can. May not be able to do it the exact same way, but you always have a different road to take to get to the same destination.
Besides your parents, were there others that helped you, and your sister in particular, two of you, adapt, adjust, go through the transitions from elementary school to middle school to high school? Or was it just, we can do it?
Well, we didn't really have the resources then that we have now. We didn't have doctors that really knew how to use any type of accessibility equipment. We didn't have any of that. We didn't have anything that talked to us. So basically, we just figured it out on our own.
Sandy, you said you're married.
Yes.
Right? You have children?
I have 2 children.
Really?
A son and a daughter, and I have 4 grandchildren, 2 boys, 2 girls.
Any indication of any visual issues with any of them?
No. We've had them tested, uh-huh. and we make sure that they go and get their eyes checked. But so far, no one else has had any kind of problems with their eyes.
It appears it's going to skip the generation.
I hope it skips
after
a couple,
you
yes.
and a couple more.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, that's good. And maybe by then
they would have something
that'll take care of it. That would be super. Training. You do some training. Who do you work for?
I currently work for LC Industries in North Carolina.
And what on earth do you train people doing?
So LC Industries is a very unique company. Although we're a manufacturing company, our mission at LC Industries is to hire the blind and the visually impaired. And I'm the training manager there, so I get to facilitate training to both sighted and visually impaired or blind employees.
Well, how can you train sighted employees? What do you train them to do, for example?
So some of the classes that we facilitate for our sighted employees are more like management skills or customer service skills. We teach office suite products like Excel and Outlook and PowerPoint and Word to sighted and blind employees.
I would imagine there are some folks who have a strange reaction that you're visually impaired, but you're going to teach them how to use Excel?
That's correct, yeah.
And do you tell people that at the outset that you are visually impaired?
Everybody knows right off the bat that I'm visually impaired, correct. At LC Industries, we have so many different accessibility tools. On our computers, we have Zoom Text or Magic, which is a magnification program, and it also has a voice that can talk to you if you turn it on, if you so choose. We also use NVDA, which is a screen reader program, and we also have CCTVs, people that are visually impaired that don't need the voice, so we can put paperwork underneath it and it magnifies it on a screen and we can write or read under it. So we have so many different types of accessibility products that we use that we can employ the people that are blind or visually impaired. We have group and customer service. We have three totally blind customer service representatives. We have a gentleman in IT who's totally blind, and about 75% of our manufacturing facility is partially blind or totally blind.
That's wonderful. Not just that a company's doing something, but they have a person like you who can totally relate to the visually impaired employee in a leadership role.
And that's the fun part for me. There is nothing more that I like than helping them find their way, teaching them something new, teaching shortcuts. Sometimes it's a challenge. When we had our very first blind employee that was going to do customer service, I didn't know how to teach him what the screen was going to look like because, of course, he'd never seen it. So what I did was I took a piece of cardstock and drew it out on a piece of paper and brought it home. And my husband bought me some puff paint from the fabric store, and we traced it out in puff paint. And when you let puff paint dry, it embosses like you would on a T-shirt or fabric. Once it was dry, I brought it back to work, and I gave it to him, and I explained to him so he could feel what the screen was going to look like because he could touch all the little squares and all the tabs and all the little cells.
For that program.
Yeah. All the little cells, yeah, on the tables that he would be working in that on his computer.
What a great idea.
So sometimes you really have to think outside the box of how you can teach somebody something in order for them to be able to do their job. And you have to do that with sports as well. Back in the day, I used to teach a blind bowling league. My sister and I both ran a blind bowling league. And we had 14 blind bowlers. And five of them had guide dogs, so the dogs would come in and sit by the table where the scorekeeper was, and we would put up a rail in the middle of the lane so that they could feel, you know, where the end of the lane was, and we
right.
would teach them how many steps to the left or the right to take in order for them to be able to throw the ball down the middle of the lane. So what we did was we got these little games with the little pegs that you find at Cracker Barrel
the
tables.
Sure.
So we had those on each of the score tables. So the person that was keeping score, whatever they knocked down, they would take those little pegs out, and so the person could feel what they had left.
What a great idea.
Yeah, that was fun.
Does that go all the way to being able to take out two pins that are one right behind the other?
Well, as my dad used to always tell me, if you cover them the right way, they'll both go down, yes.
Sounds like Dad knew something.
He did.
People had to carry their own ball to and from the return tray.
Yes, and we made sure that they did that. You know, we would get their shoes for them and put them on the chairs, but we try to make them as totally independent as they absolutely had to. And we had some great, great people that we bowled with. Actually, my sister and I thought we were going to be smart one day and play a joke on one of the blind bowlers. Yeah. Isn't that funny? And so we decided when he came in, we were going to whisper hello. And so I whispered, "Good morning, Frank." And my sister whispered, "Good morning, Frank." And he'd say, "Hi, Sandy. Hi, Sharon." And we kind of looked at each other. We're like, "Well, how did you know which one we were?" He said, "Because you're both wearing different perfume."
Oh, my gosh.
That's how he could tell us apart.
His visual sense
was his nose
was gone, but his nose, his smelling sense, was enhanced.
Right, right. And that's typically what happens. If you lose one sense, your other senses get very, very acute. It's amazing what you can hear when you can't see something.
You know, I think that could be a great liability if you happen to be the child of a person who's visually impaired. Because, you know, they think that mom can see with eyes in the back of
their head,
but mom can hear them when they whisper.
Oh, yes.
Oh, that's not fair.
Oh, yes. That's very true.
Is it?
Oh, yeah. My husband says that to me all the time. You know, I can hear, like, if there's a car in the driveway, I'll say, "Somebody's here." And he'll say, "No, there's not." And then next thing you know, the doorbell rings. And he's like, "How do you do that?" It's kind of like your senses just automatically kick in. You know, it's not like you're trying. It's like one of God's little protective devices that you lost one sense, so your other ones are automatically enhanced.
Did you happen to notice an age at which perhaps that began to manifest for you?
I would say it probably didn't occur to me until I had children, because there was more things going on in your home. So you're more acute, like when you first have a baby and the baby's crying or the baby wakes up, you're more acute to that type of a situation.
Yes.
And so I think from then on, now you start to pick up the fact like, oh, I could hear that and somebody else couldn't.
Sandy, when you first began to go out into the work world, had you gone to college first? And if so, what did you major in? And what did you do at the beginning of your work life?
So when I graduated from high school, during my first 2 years out of high school, I went to college for business because I took secretarial office procedures in high school. So I wanted to just continue that into business. But, you know, by then I wasn't driving anymore. It was hard for me to get back and forth to school. So I just started working. And when I worked mostly in retail and customer service, things that didn't really require office type of skills. But as I grew up and my children were old enough to go to school, I worked for a company that had their own university. And so what we did was we were always required once a month to take a course. So I took full advantage of that. So I would sign up for project management courses. I signed up for Excel courses. Anything that they offered, I signed up for. And I'd been there 10 years, and in those 10 years, I learned so much. But in the beginning, when I started going, I was very nervous. You know, like there's a whole bunch of people in this room who are sighted, and I'm not. But, you know, I always made sure I would tell the person who was facilitating the class, you know, "I'm visually impaired, and these are the things that I may need from you in order to follow along." And you find out that people are so accommodating when you're in their class. And 90% of the time, the other people in the class had no idea that I was visually impaired.
Well, what brought you to North Carolina and LC Industries?
So the company that I was working for at the time in New Hampshire transferred me here. And I was here for 2 years, and I went through a layoff. And I was the one that got laid off. But I had been watching the news one night, and I saw an infomercial all about LC Industries and their affiliation with the Duke Eye Center. So I went online and I looked them up, and they actually had a job opening that I posted for. And lo and behold, I was hired, and I've been there 6 years now. I started there as a business analyst in the IT department, and then I went from there into the finance department. And from there, I went into human resources, where I became a training manager. So now I facilitate the training for the company.
Is there anything you can't do?
Drive.
Drive a car.
Not unless I had a Google car.
Well, you know, that may be coming.
It could be.
Yeah,
I would love to do that.
You think so?
Oh, sure.
Did your sister, by the way, have to stop her driving at the same time?
Yep. We both had to do the exact same thing.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, it was only for 4 more years. Because we got our license when we were 18. So by the time we were 21, that had pretty much stopped the progression of the dystrophy. Mm-hmm. So when we were 22, because your license is for 4 years, couldn't pass the eye test again.
This question I have for you has absolutely nothing to do with being visually impaired.
Okay.
But I'm just wondering if your husband, who is married to a twin, has the same issues that I have because I'm married to a twin, where I feel like I'm married to two women.
That's exactly the way it works, unfortunately.
Okay.
Yes.
Oh, boy.
When my sister and I get together, we'll be having a conversation or someone will ask us a question, and we will both give the exact same answer and the exact same tone of voice. My husband says it sounds like you're listening to stereo.
Amazing.
It is.
I mean, my wife's twin is not, they're not identical, but there's an awful lot that's the same between them.
There is. And, you know, for Sharon and I, we were both pregnant both times at the same time. Our children are like weeks apart. If one's sick, the other is sick. It's a very big twin thing.
Something in the air going woo, woo, woo out there between
yeah.
the two of you, isn't
it? Well, they
there?
Always say that if you have identical twins, you always have one sender and one receiver. She's the sender. I'm the receiver.
Mm-hmm.
So if she's sick, I will feel it.
When you look at the area of accessibility, are there any particular items that you really strongly urge people to become comfortable with?
I encourage people to be comfortable with however far they want to take it. For instance, if they have their cell phone, to use the voiceover. My iPad, I use the voiceover, and I read a lot of books, and I use that for reading. And I just got a new pair of glasses, and they're called eSight glasses. They help me to see distance and close up, so I wouldn't need to use my magnification program on my computer. I've had them since the middle of January, and they're probably the biggest improvement in accessibility that I've seen since in dealing with accessibility tools. They're very cool. And I just participated in the ATIA conference down in Florida, Orlando, Florida, and that whole conference is all about accessibility tools. So there is so much out there for people to go ahead and learn to use. They have this little tool called an ORCAM, and it's for people that are blind. And it's a little tiny camera that you put on the arm of your glasses, and you have a little remote control, and wherever you point your nose and you hit the remote, it will automatically read to you what it is. So it could be a book, it could be a prescription bottle, it could be a cellophane package of candy. Whatever you're holding, it'll read it to you. And it also does face recognition. So if you're looking at somebody and you press the remote control button and you say, "Dick," the next time that person comes in front of you, if you press the button, it'll automatically tell you, "Dick." It tells you the person's name who's standing in front of you.
What a wonderful piece of technology that
they
is.
Have some unbelievable pieces of technology out there.
You know, we have listeners who are of all ages, and we often think of the young folks in society as being the most technologically capable. I have a hunch that there's probably a fair amount of young people as well as older people who don't know where to go necessarily to find, to access this technology. Do you have any tips on resources that they should be looking toward to find out what is there and what might be most helpful to them?
So for the younger people, I would say they're pretty computer savvy, and you can go out on Google and just Google anything. I always try to go in and Google accessibility tools. Apple has an accessibility website for their latest apps that you can find. They have apps out there for your phones that you can read money. It reads colors. It's like a walking GPS. There are different types of websites that you can go to, or your local vocational rehabilitation. They have all kinds of accessibility programs, training classes, that type of thing.
And for the older folks, they can tap into those same resources?
Absolutely. If they know how to use a computer, you know, they're pretty much all on the computer. You can Google anything about where you want to look for the accessibility tools. And a lot of times, even Facebook now, I just saw on the news, was coming out with a voiceover for being able to read captions for pictures. So even different types of companies like that are trying to get in on the accessibility train so that everybody is able to use the products that they provide.
You're a person who doesn't take a visual impairment as the inability to see, because you just said, I saw on Facebook recently. It's just a different way to see, isn't it?
It is. It's absolutely a different way to see. You'll hear people all the time, even if they're totally blind, reference, guess who I saw the other day. So, like I said, everybody's the same. It's just what your specific disability is should never define who you are.
I have a hard time thinking of you as having a disability and all that you do and all that you've accomplished.
Well, thank you. I try to make sure that, you know, everybody realizes that people are all different and people are all the same and everybody needs help at something at some point. And it's great to be able to help other people.
Is that perhaps how you define success for you?
I would say success for me is when I teach somebody or show somebody how to do something that either encourages them to step out and move ahead, or I watch them get a promotion. For me, that's what I think success is. When you can help somebody improve themselves and not feel so confined because they have a disability, that's success. Because you never know how you impact somebody else down the road by helping them.
How about some advice? What advice would you give to our listeners for them to connect to their success, particularly for younger people who are starting out on their journey with a different ability than other people may have?
I would say try to be as independent as you can. Try to learn as much as you possibly can about the accessibility tools that are out there, because you can do the same thing as anybody else that's sighted, and sometimes you can even do it better than somebody else that's sighted, because people that are sighted actually do not learn to use their other senses as well as somebody who's visually impaired or blind. So we actually have an advantage over other people. And if people can figure that out, they'll be shocked how much they can move up and how many things that they can accomplish.
That's great. That is great. Thank you, Sandy.
You're very welcome. Thank you so much.
We've run out of time for today's episode of Connect to Success, and our thanks go out to Sandy Romke for sharing her thoughts and experiences with all of you, our listeners. We hope that you have enjoyed today's program and found something in it that can be beneficial to you or someone you know. It's never too soon or too late to connect to your success. Be sure to tune in every third Tuesday of the month at 2:30 p.m. This program is rebroadcast, as noted in the TRRS program guide, and is available as a podcast at our website, www.triangleReadingService.org. If you have any questions or comments, please call TRRS at 919-832-5138. I'm Dick Hayden for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. So long until next time.